Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples.
Anyone else feel like they're talking like this time of year and sneezing and coughing and annoying your family while you're watching TV like I'm sure I do?
Well, yeah, I know that I am because my kids tend to tell me. Luckily for those of us who live with these symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. Designed for serious allergy sufferers, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease in as little as a half an hour, by the way. Ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed.
When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
It is just absolutely so wonderful meeting you and sitting here, and hopefully my audience learned so much from you. I know I did today. It is the end of September. It is Suicide Prevention Month. I am honoring, and I've continued to honor throughout this whole month of episodes, all that have been lost to suicide. I'm so very grateful that I'm still here. that I'm still here. It's been a long road, and there's lots of ups and downs in life. And I'm sorry if I'm emotional about this, but I heard a story today and it made me very sad about this, but I'm doing good. I'm still here. And if you are struggling, there's always somebody to talk to. We both openly just shared that we both struggled. It's okay to struggle. It's what you need to know is that you matter. I say this all the time, your piece of the puzzle is needed in this world and you have to keep going. So I honor all of those families that have lost a family member to suicide. And I just, if you're listening to this and you're struggling, reach out. There is hope. You can always reach out to me. The best way to find me is on my Instagram, Judging Megan. And you have to keep going because we need you in this world if you're listening. We've all been put here for a reason and we all deserve acceptance.
Judging Megan with Megan Judge.
I'm a trauma survivor from a really young age and I have been diagnosed with complex PTSD in the past few years. I've been surrounded by death and abuse much of my life. I've been dragged through the mud and have been to the point of not wanting to go on anymore. Through my interviews with other survivors, I've learned that there is a way out. From recovering to surviving and thriving, we all have the strength to come out the other side.
You are listening to Judging Megan.
So I have a couple announcements, and I like saying housekeeping items. That's my new thing that I like to do because, like I said, it makes me feel important and like I'm running a business meeting. My first announcement is that I'm going to be posting additional content and episodes to Patreon. So Patreon, the Patreon site is, it's a $5 membership fee.
And if you are interested in listening to me, you know, do some additional content, some additional websites every month, or websites, some additional episodes every month, head over to Patreon, Patreon.com/judgingMegan, and you can join. My husband is going to be reoccurring on this, we've decided, and a lot of it is going to be about more, it's going to be lighter and I hope funny, and we'll be talking about our marriage and, you know, our 20 plus year relationship. We met very young. I'm only 26. I want my guests to know that. Just kidding. And second thing, join me on YouTube. You can see me in all my glory. I now am up to like, I don't even know how many subscribers. It's embarrassing. But if you listen every week, I know that you do. Please just go over and subscribe. Subscribe and like me on Apple Podcasts. And I think that's all my housekeeping notes. I did last week talk about my accident when I got all hot and bothered talking about running into that orange concrete pole because of that woman that was so selfish. I already told you that story. But what I will tell you is my car is finally coming out of the shop. I've been driving this rental car. It is so confusing to me. This sounds like so obnoxious, like rich lady problems, but whenever I have to get a rental car, I might bring my guest in on this one. I don't understand how to drive. Like, I've talked openly before about my lack of skills driving. I'm just not a good driver. I drive like a grandma. I get so confused with rental cars. Like, you're so accustomed and used to driving a certain kind of car, and then all the knobs and the things are in different places. It is so confusing to me, and I'm so scared. Like, the other day I was driving this rental car and I accidentally put the car into neutral when I was driving up a hill. So that's just me not being that smart. I don't know. My guest today, Del A.D. Jones, welcome. I'm so excited to have you on. Before I introduce you with all of your titles, are you the same way about rental cars, or are you a good driver?
You know, I was laughing when you were saying that because I'm originally from the UK and I used to go backwards and forwards so often. I was always having to drive rental cars and drive on the other side of the road. So I actually really, I'm really good at it. So it doesn't confuse me.
Oh, so you obviously are, but that is so interesting. If you were used to driving on a certain side of, I would be hitting cars all the time. Like, I'm known for actually going down the wrong side of the street, not because I'm on any substance. I'm just a moron. Like, there's a one-way street in my town and I literally always forget it's one way. And I've caught myself a few times turning onto it. How does your brain, you must be a very smart lady. I can obviously tell already. But how do you remember how to drive on the opposite side of the street?
You know what? Somebody taught me something many years ago, which is I am always in the middle of the road. I'm next to the white line. If I'm against the edge of the road or the hedge or the pavement, what we call a pavement in England, which is the side, what do you call it here?
Like the sidewalk.
If I'm next to the side, I am on the wrong side of the road. So as the driver, I've always got to be in the middle of the road.
Oh my gosh. By the way, everyone, this whole podcast today is about driving on the wrong side of the road. Welcome to the podcast. Totally joking. Del is a codependency and narcissistic abuse recovery coach.
Yes.
That is so interesting. I've had some very interesting titles in the past few episodes. I always say that I kind of go through, like, especially with the podcast, I kind of find that I'm like, go through different periods. Like Picasso has his blue period. I'm going through like a period of really interesting women coming on my podcast where they talk about all kinds of really interesting topics and have titles that I've never heard of in my life. But it's like, oh my gosh, I need to talk to that person. That's exactly what I think people need to hear today. So tell me a little bit about what you do exactly.
Well, it's pretty self-explanatory in the title. There are people that suffer from codependency, and they tend to find themselves getting into narcissistic relationships. Mm-hmm. So I help, and often people are unaware of their own codependent tendencies, and they'll just be like, God, it's just so bad luck. You know, I keep meeting these narcissistic men, and what I help people do is find out what it is that they're putting out there innocently, but they're putting something out there that has narcissists attracted to them. So I help them understand, rather than try and change their mate and change a narcissist, which if you know anything about narcissism, it's extremely hard to do. Mm-hmm. But what we can do is we can change how we feel about ourselves and how we show up in the world. And by doing that, narcissists tend to be like, no, you're too much trouble. I'm going to go for the easy prey, the low-hanging fruit. So that's what I help, is I help people identify what they're innocently putting out there into the world, as they say, and taking the focus less on trying to change their partner, but helping them see how they can see themselves differently and show up differently in the world, more empowered. That's what I do.
So Dr. Nadine Macaluso, who I kind of mm-hmm. talked to before, so she has written a book about the trauma bond and, you know, was in a narcissistic relationship with her ex-husband, who was the Wolf of Wall Street, total narcissist. I've had numerous women, like more than I can count, come on this podcast that have found themselves drawn into these relationships. Do you find that this stems from childhood, a lot of times with girls or women that find themselves getting into these relationships? I'm just curious about that.
Yeah, for me, I would say, first of all, both men and women can become codependent. Mm-hmm. It's more women. I think that's cultural. I think we're mm-hmm. raised to sort of, you know, and I'll talk about a little bit more about that in a minute. But out of the women I work with, I would say most of them have developed their codependent traits very early on in childhood. But occasionally, somebody might be actually going through a really vulnerable time in their life. Like I have one client that lost her mother at a very early age, and she was so traumatized by that, she was vulnerable. And this narcissistic type sort of just swooped in and rescued her during this vulnerable period, mm-hmm. whereas her childhood wasn't traumatic. It was just she was going through a vulnerable time. But I would say 95% of the time, it's related to childhood, for sure.
Well, I also ask that because, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's very rare that women are narcissists. I've been told that it's more they can be sociopaths. And I'm curious to know your thoughts on that.
It used to be... pretty much like most women were codependents and most of the men were narcissists. Mm-hmm. I think we're living in an ever increasingly narcissistic culture. And I do think that there are narcissistic women out there. I think for sure with the whole sort of social media and TikTok and just even in the, I say Hollywood, but just the film industry in general. I used to work in the film industry. I used to be a costume designer many years ago, and I've met my fair share of.
I can't wait to hear about your story. Yeah.
But I definitely met quite a few narcissistic actresses along the way as well.
Yes. And I agree. I mean, I've been in a relationship with, a good friend who was 100%, like if you go down the checklist of a sociopath mm-hmm. and a narcissist, 100% a narcissist. But I was curious because I have been, I think it was a guest recently that was talking about the differences between the two, and that usually mm-hmm. men fall into that category of narcissism and women much more likely fall into the category of sociopaths. So I was just curious about that. Let me ask you, I would love to hear your story. So I want to find out. I've been having a lot of guests come on lately from England. I wonder if that's me, like the universe telling me that I'm supposed to be going to England, because I've never been. I've always wanted to go. So yeah. I just need it.
Maybe.
So tell me about your upbringing.
Yeah, I'm from the UK, and I often say that I grew up in a very idyllic, puritanical part of the UK called North Wales. It was a very sort of Bible-thumping, chapel-going community. And I was born in 1959, so it wasn't the sort of late 60s, 70s yet. But my mother was not your typical 50s housewife, and I was actually the product of an affair she was having with my father. She had an affair with my father for about 8 years. She had 3 children with him. And so we were definitely scorned upon in the community. They were not very embracing of us. But the thing is, I never met my father. It's hard to explain logistically, but we had a little Welsh cottage that we used as a bed and breakfast at the time. And we slept in these little, what we call caravans in England, little trailers in the backyard. It was a very rural setting. And he would visit my mum once a week at night. And we were in bed in our own little caravans, told not to go near their caravan. So I didn't meet him. Didn't meet him to actually exchange words with him until I was turning 30. And but I'll get back to that in a minute. But anyway, going to school, it was very hard. He was, as I said, he was married. He had children of his own. And everybody in the little village school knew the situation. And then I learnt the words bastard and illegitimate very early on, mostly from the school teacher, actually. And I've just felt very, that word illegitimate, I mean, not that I exactly knew the exact meaning of it, but I knew enough to know that it meant that I wasn't legitimate. Mm-hmm. That's how I felt. I felt very shamed. I felt like I wasn't the same as other children and I didn't have the same rights as them. And definitely, as I say, we were picked on and bullied and excuse me. So growing up, I was really an unhappy little child, I have to say. And then my mother, to raise money for us at that time in the 60s in the UK, they were shutting down big mental institutions and they were paying people in the community to house mentally disabled people. They weren't sort of severely, I shouldn't say that. But anyway, that's what was going on in the 60s. So my mother converted our little bed and breakfast into a home for mentally disabled people. And so that was, again, very scary. And she was worked very, very hard. And I just, my therapist used to say that I suffered from orphan syndrome. I didn't really have parents. Obviously I had a mother, but she was so, busy working and everything. I don't really remember her very much at all growing up. One of my older sisters, I'm one of 7 children, was more of the caretakers of the younger children. So that was sort of pretty it growing up, and having a father that didn't acknowledge me when I would pass him in the street, he would just look the other way, was very painful. I felt like I wasn't good enough to be loved if I was prettier, thinner, cleverer, good enough, he'd want me. And he never did. So you grow up feeling that, unlovable. And craving male attention. I was one of those little girls that kept thinking life would be better if my father was around. So I was definitely needy for male attention, which you can imagine, if you don't have anybody protecting you, can bring some unwanted attention. So that was going on as well. So I was pretty miserable. Yeah.
Let me just ask you something. Okay, number one, and I hate to make this about appearance, but you need to go to YouTube, everyone. Sorry to plug YouTube again. I don't know what's in the water. I know you live in Malibu now. I live in the Manhattan Beach, Redondo, Hermosa Beach area.
Very close.
Very close. We have to meet in person. Whatever you're doing, you literally look so young. It's insane. So I have to say that. That's the first point. And I was just shocked when you told me your age. I'm like, oh my God. Number two. I'm so sorry to hear the amount of trauma, like from a very young age, never feeling like you were wanted. And then, like, I just can't even imagine that, like that pain and not understanding it. And then not only getting it from home and not feeling accepted at home and feeling different and not having a dad, but then going off to school and being treated like you're a bastard child and teased and all of that stuff, what that must have done to you as a small child and the amount of trauma that and the wounds that you must have had to overcome to get past that and like really understand that you deserve so much more in life. And then also I wanted to ask one other question. So you were one of seven. So your mom ended up having the seven kids with that man or your father. Sorry to call him that man, but I'm just curious.
Yeah, that's okay.
Sorry to call him that man. I got that.
No, not at all. No, actually, she was married before. She had three children with her husband before she left him and was with my father. And then she went on to have another child after that with another man. So there are, you know, but we all consider ourselves my mum's children. I mean, we're all her children. It wasn't all bad. You know, it was, we grew up in the countryside. We were little vagabonds running up and down, you know, the woods and the rivers and things like that. So there were some parts that were really beautiful about it, very untraditional. But again, as I said, I was definitely, I was really an unhappy little girl, I have to say. I was not, didn't feel safe in the home or in the community. So when I was about 19, I didn't even blame anybody else. I blamed myself. I thought, what's wrong with me? I'm not equipped for this world. Everybody else seems to, you know how to do it. So I was contemplated leaving the planet, but fortunately I didn't. And again, it was actually my love for my mother, because I thought this would destroy her if I did this. So I stayed around for her. And then I was lucky enough to come to America when I was 21. And I discovered, you know, spirituality and self-help and all of these things. And I was just like, oh, my God. I remember the first workshop I signed up for was something called Healing the Shame That Binds with John Bradshaw. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, you're talking to me. This is I am so shame-based. And that was just the start of it. And thank God it really, you know, took my journey. I think, as I mentioned earlier, I met my father when I was 29. I was about to turn 30, and I just was crazy in my 20s. I was, you know, I was crazy. I'll just leave it at that. Yeah. And my relationships were unhealthy. If just any man out there, if I dated you and I left you, you were the good guys. You were the good ones. I was just attracted to the bad ones. I wanted to prove myself. I needed to win a man over. Obviously, it was that sort of childhood need in me to get the attention of an unavailable man. So,
just FYI, I was the exact same way. And it's always shocking to me that I didn't end up. I'm actually quite shocked. I had some very nice boyfriends I dated when I was young, but I was so after the bad boy. The worse you were to me, the more I was like, oh my gosh, I'm in love with you. And if somebody was nice to me that I was dating, I was like so mean to them. And I have guilt about it now. Like, I'm like, God, I was so mean to some of the guys I dated. I'm actually shocked that I didn't end up married. I credit my husband. Like, I don't know what it is, the universe, God, or whoever it was that, and don't get me wrong, we had a giant fight this morning and we hate each other half the day. I'm joking, but I'm not joking. How I ended up so lucky to be with somebody that like was brought into my life almost to like help me, because I was just, you weren't the only hot mess in your 20s. I was like the biggest hot mess in my 20s. I don't even know how I survived, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I really don't.
Me too. It was good in a way.
Going backwards a little bit. So you I'm also, you know, I'm very open about struggling with my own issues with being suicidal and suicidal ideations. Part of the reason I stayed and I got, you know, I'm not perfect. I'm still working through all of my issues. And I was diagnosed with complex PTSD a few years ago, stemming from my childhood. But I stayed for my fam, for my kids and my husband. And I'm curious about your mother. Like, it sounds like your relationship with your mother is like everything to you. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it, you know, it's interesting. I used to say jokingly when I was in my 20s, I'd call her mother, father, God, because she was an atheist. And so in our house, she was literally our father, our mother, and God. And, you know, when you grow up in a family with just a single parent, and she's the only, and your community is unsafe, you sort of compartmentalize. And I just made her into, like, I was the good little girl. I never ruffled feathers with her. Occasion. Yeah. I remember saying once when I was little, you know, gosh, I wish I had a father. And the ramifications of that were just horrendous. So I learned very, very early on not to say anything, not to upset her, to just treat her like she was perfect. Mm-hmm. And I suppressed all of my hurt and my upset feelings. And so I just squished all of that down. So I hit a pocket of anger with her when I first went into therapy. I went into therapy, like I said, when I was 29. And part of that was because I knew I was crazy in my 20s. And I thought, I'm not going into the next decade carrying all this with me. Mm-hmm. So I got myself in therapy, and it was really, really helpful. Helped me understand why I was acting the way I was doing. It helped me understand my sort of blind loyalty to my mother, and that I actually could allow myself to acknowledge the pain and suffering and some of my feelings. And she wasn't very happy about that, but we worked through it about a decade later. Mm-hmm. But it was really for me, and I like you, I got married when I was, you know, I thought I was ready to marry. I'd started therapy. But I wasn't healthy, and my marriage wasn't healthy. And so that lasted about 18 years. And when that came to an end, I was turning 50. And I came across a spiritual understanding, and I'd been on a spiritual path for many years. But it really, really, as I say, it helped me find the way out of my compulsive thinking and behavior that was causing me to suffer from codependency and attract these narcissistic types. But it also helped me with my relationship with my mother. I really was able to see the good that she'd done, and also acknowledge the things that she'd done that were crazy. I mean, literally crazy. I mean, as a mother myself, I look back and think, how could you have done that? But, you know, I didn't walk in her shoes.
I think it's so interesting that you say that. You know, I wanted to also ask you about your first meeting with your father, but I wanted to go back a little bit, but I wanted to also say, you know, you learn so much in therapy, depending on like what kind of therapy. I've been in all different kinds. I'm sure you have as well. Mm-hmm. But the thing with our mother, so I lost my dad, my audience knows, pretty young. I was 12 going on 13. And my mom was kind of absent for that entire almost 9 months when my dad was sick in the hospital when I was 12. And she, something I learned from my mom, who's actually been on the podcast, is her wounds of her own life, which are extremely deep. Mm-hmm. And like when I hear her story, there's a part of me that understands and is sympathetic to the fact that she is the way that she is. And a lot of the things about my mom are things that are never going to change. Like, I cannot change her. She's in her 70s now. I'm in my 40s. But what I've come to realize, because we had a really bad period for like the I would say up until this past year, we were in like fights and fighting all the time. And I had also put my mom on a pedestal for my whole life, like since I was a little kid. I just wanted my mom's like approval. I wanted, my mom was a beauty queen and a model. I wanted to be just like my mom. I just like, I idolized my mom. Like she was everything. And to get to a point where you realize in life, they're not everything. I mean, they're humans. And now just like you, I'm a mother myself. And I'm like every day, like, oh my God, am I going to screw my kid up? Like I just said this, why did I just cuss in like the carpool line? Or why did I tell them a story and do this? Or why did I say that? It's like, you're constantly like questioning yourself as a mother just to do the best you can. But I know like I have two daughters are going to come back to me at some point and be like, do you remember the time that you did this? This is all your fault. And it's a cycle of being human, right? That there's no such thing as perfectionism. But some people, especially if you're like lacking a parent or you're like lacking whatever you're lacking in life, you tend to like glorify that parent, and that, and everything you've said has made sense.
Yeah, it's, you know, and it's survival. I mean, you know, when you're a child, you've only got one person in the whole world you're depending on, you know, certainly in my case, I was like, I got to keep her happy, you know, because she would threaten to leave us or, have me move out when I was 5 years old if I upset her.
Yeah.
So, you know, things like that would, you know, just, you just learn just to accommodate and adapt. But you stuff all those feelings down. And as I said, they came up in therapy and I realized that, you know, there were things that was really crazy about my childhood and very vulnerable, raising young children in a home for mentally disabled people and not having locks on our doors or a separate living quarters. It was just one flew over the cuckoo's nest, free for all.
That is so scary.
It was very scary as a child, but through my mother's eyes, she saw it differently. She felt that these, as much as they were mentally disabled, that they weren't dangerous. But, you know, if their meds were not, you know, that they needed correcting or something like that, they could act out. And as a very young child, that was very scary for me, but she couldn't see it through my eyes. You know, this was our livelihood, and she cared very deeply about our residents. And often I always felt I got the message that unless I was crazy like them, we didn't get attention from her. So I definitely sort of, like I say, in my teens and my 20s went a little crazy. So, I mean, just, you know, I wouldn't say crazy, but you know what I mean? You said you went through it too, but.
You had a lot to unpack and a lot of like, I mean, it makes sense why you were going to rebel and do whatever you ended up doing. Can you tell me about when you ended up, I need to know, and I think my audience is probably thinking this too, when you finally met your dad, what that was like?
Yeah. Well, I'd actually, because I would go home to Wales every Christmas and my birthday's in January. So I got and he's still married and he still has, you know, his children. And I didn't want to, I felt really guilty growing up. I didn't want to upset the family any more than they had been upset by, you know, what my mother and their father had done. And so I sort of sneakily got a note to him to meet me somewhere and he didn't show up. And I was like, okay. So I borrowed my mother's car, talking about cars again. And I drove over to his house. I knew where he lived. And I got out of the car and I felt like, I mean, that was the longest walk of my life. I felt like my knees were on the ground. I couldn't even barely get to the front door. And I knocked on the front door and he answered it and he mistook me for my sister who, for some reason, and well, she was quite infamous actually in the UK. She was a beauty queen, so like your mother. So he thought I was her initially, and then I said, no, it's Del. Do you know did you get my note? And he was like, oh yeah, I thought it was a joke. And I was like, no, it wasn't a joke. And then he said, well, what do you want with me? And I said, I needed to meet you. I said, I've never met you, we've never spoken. But you've walked into every single relationship I've ever had. And I had to meet you. So he invited me in and he said, oh, I hear you live in America now. And I said, yes. And he said, are you an actress? And I said, no, I was too shy. I said, but I work on movies. I was a costume designer. I said, I wanted you to see my name at the end of the film and go, oh, that's my daughter. And his response was, oh, you needn't have bothered, love. I don't watch films.
So, oh gosh.
I think that, and in that moment, I just realized that he just wasn't capable. He just wasn't capable. And something, and I, in the end, he said, you're going to have to leave. My wife is coming home. And so I left and I pulled into this little sort of lay-by and this blood-curdling animal scream just rose through me. I think it started in my toes. It just was unbelievable. But at the same time, I felt like I was releasing something so huge. And it was like this sort of festering wound was just, you know, this, it felt like I had a claw in a wound and I pulled it out and it just, you know, released. And so that was that. I did see him once after that. And I just realized that it was just going to bring up too much for my siblings who didn't want to meet him. I was the only one that had this fantasy of, you know, life would have been better if he'd been in our life. And I also didn't want to hurt his family anymore. So I gently bowed out. So, but I was glad I faced it. It was definitely healing. As hard as it was to do that, it was healing for me. I was able to let go and move on.
Do you think that I cried when you told that story, because it makes me think of like how you were so vulnerable to go there, not knowing like what the outcome would be. You know, you hear these stories and you think I believe there's happy endings in life, but it's rare, especially if he was not in the picture all that time. You know what I'm saying? It breaks my heart thinking of, even if you were 29, to me, that's still a kid, you know, going, being vulnerable, expecting something and just not getting like the peace. And then just to be turned away, it breaks my heart.
Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples.
Anyone else feel like they're talking like this time of year and sneezing and coughing and annoying your family while you're watching TV like I'm sure I do? Well, yeah, I know that I am because my kids tend to tell me. Luckily for those of us who live with these symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. Designed for serious allergy sufferers, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, and itchy nose and throat and sinus congestion and pressure with ease in as little as a half an hour, by the way. Ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Well, actually, to clarify, he didn't really turn me away. He actually, I think he would have continued to have a relationship with me.
Oh, really?
What I meant was when he said that you needn't have bothered, I think that was just his truth.
Yeah.
You know, he just didn't watch films. It was like, it wasn't, I don't think he meant it I think it was just, I don't know how to say this gently, because there is a happy ending. There's a very happy ending, which I'd love to share with you.
Oh, I love
that. I think he just showed that he was incapable of, how do I put this?
Would it be there was a missing sensitivity chip?
Absolutely. Yes. To quote Jennifer Aniston, there was the sensitivity. Yeah,
I'd like to use that terminology that you're missing sensitivity chip.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, 100%. And he did, actually, I did meet him a second time. And I met my half-sister, his oldest daughter came, and she asked me why I wanted to meet her father. And I said what I said. And I said, you know, I didn't grow up with a father, and it was left a hole in my heart. And she said that I lost my father the day that I met you two. And that's when I was like, oh my God, you know, the people, these children that have been impacted by my father's behavior and my mother's behavior. And I just thought, you know what, they've been through enough. And so I didn't have contact with them again. But fast forward, I have regained contact with that half sister that I met, and she is, I'm going to cry if I say, she is truly one of the most beautiful human beings I've ever met, and has been so kind and so gracious and so loving to me and my family, given how her life was disrupted by my parents' affair. So that's a happy ending as I'm crying. Sharing.
Do you consider her family, or is it just
100%?
Yeah.
I feel like when I met her, it was almost like immediate. It was like, no, you're my sister. You're as much a sister to me as my other sisters.
There's always kind of a silver lining in this kind of stuff, I think. You know, I truly believe that, you know, I say this a lot, sorry to my people that listen all the time, but life is a series of lessons. This is just what I believe. And there's really hard things we have to go through in life. I'm very spiritual. And you wonder a lot of times, like, why is this happening? Why do I have to go through this? But there is so much, like, out of pain comes so much, like, beauty or evolving as a human being. I say this a lot to my guests. I'm very drawn to the people I have on this podcast, many of which are my good friends now, because I think when your story is intertwined with like pain or hardships in life, that makes you a richer human being. I'm not saying that people that haven't gone through things in their life, they will, by the way, because that's part of life. But there's just a difference between, I found, people that have evolved as humans because of trauma or whatever it is, and people that haven't. And I do believe that there are, and I've learned this in the past couple of years, you know, when hard things continue to happen to me, that there is so much beauty that comes out of difficult and hard things. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. And the name of my course is A Spiritual Solution to Overcoming Codependency and Narcissistic Abuse. For me, there's not one single thing I've been through in life that I regret or do over ever. You know, everything has led me to where I am today. Everything has led me to the most, you know, I have the most incredible, beautiful relationship I've been in for the last 13 years. I have two absolutely gorgeous adult male children that I would never change for the world. And I love my clients, and I love being able to help them. And that is the sum of everything I've been through. And again, even at the end with my mother passed away 4 years ago, you know, I really you were mentioning your own mother's trauma. My mother had extreme trauma too. She grew up, she went through World War II, you know, where people thought they were going to die. Like, you know, I mean, it was just this, she grew up in a different time. Again, totally, my grandparents were incapable of giving her the love that she really needed. Mm-hmm. And she sought it. And, you know, at that time, as I say, it was, you know, post World War II, people grabbed what they wanted when they wanted it, even if it was somebody else's husband. I don't think it was intentional. It was just like, life is short. There is this love here and I'm going for it. So again, as I say, I can look back and go, well, gosh, you know, some of those choices were maybe not the best for children, but I see where she's coming from. And she did so much good in the world and so much good in my life too, that I, it was through my spiritual understanding that I was able to come through the other end and really enjoy the last few years of her life with her and appreciate her for who she was. And like you said, know that she wasn't going to change. Mm-hmm. and being in acceptance of that. So,
well, I think with, that's so beautifully said. But I think too, I got to a point with my own mom, because we were close. Like I idolized my mom my whole life. And I'm now at a point where I know that, you know, she's very healthy. She does like Pilates 5 days a week. But you realize how fast life goes, you know, just like a decade goes by in a blink of an eye. And to me, you know, it's very difficult to know, like, my years are limited or my moments or my conversations. That makes me sorry. So, sorry. I cry literally. I wish I could not cry every podcast, but I do.
It's a beautiful quality.
Everything you're saying. I want to find out more about kind of like once you evolve to that point of becoming spiritual and like getting out of your 18-year marriage and like kind of like where you are now, like how did that all kind of happen?
Well, like I mentioned, I mean, I actually started on a spiritual path the second I got to LA.
Yeah.
I was constantly trying to seek answers to why I was getting into these, you know, running away from the nice guys and being attracted into this toxic relationships. And I'm 63 now. I've been on a spiritual path for 42 years. Same with therapy. I was actually in therapy for close to 30 years on and off. I really needed to make sense of my life and the choices I was making. And in, I think 2006 was when I went to, in Los Angeles, we have a place called the University of Santa Monica, where they offered a master's program in spiritual psychology. So I took that course. It was a 2-year course. And it just so happened, and I was also studying with Debbie Ford, she's a shadow coach, the first light side of the dark chasers. She did a lot of work with Deepak Chopra. And so I was very, very heavily into that in around 2006. And that's when I really found out that my marriage was not what I thought it was. And I knew it was difficult. I knew it was challenging. I just didn't quite have the full picture. And once I did, and once I could see that divorce was inevitable, I studied to become a coach, a spiritual psychology coach. And so that was like the real turning point for me. And it was amazing. It helped me so much. I mean, it helped me process everything I was going through, helped me be a more stable, and the therapy again, helped me be the best mother I could be. And, you know, like we all do, we make mistakes. And I think all we can ever do is just own it and say, I'm sorry. I'm really, really sorry. And we don't have to defend ourselves. Our children are little vulnerable beings that we are responsible for. But as I said, fortunately, my children are amazing and healthy, thank goodness. So that's really where it started. And I, as I said, it was therapy combined with the spirituality that really, really changed my life. So when I coach, I come from that modality. I coach from the perspective of we're spiritual beings having a human experience. But as human beings, we do have psychology. So I teach the spiritual aspect and the psychological aspect to really gain a deeper understanding of you know, what we're doing. And like you, I totally agree. We're here to grow and expand and learn. And sometimes through our human lens, we only have a very narrow view of what's going on. And I always trust that there's a great big spiritual picture that we don't even see, and everything is in divine order. And, you know, to just trust.
What does spirituality look like to you? Like, I know spirit, like for me, it's God. It's, I don't even really know what God looks like, but I know that I believe in God. I pray every day. Spirituality looks different for everybody. I was curious as to what spirituality looks like for you.
For me, because I have some clients that say, you know, I'll check in with them. Like, again, exactly. What is your, do you have any sort of feelings around spiritual? I really have to have a client that's open to a bigger picture rather than just the human experience.
Yeah.
So, but some people will say to me, well, I don't believe in God. I'm an atheist. And I'll say, well, do you believe there's an intelligence behind life, that there's something taking care of the world while you're asleep at night? Something's making your heart continue to beat and your lungs go in and out. Or if you're pregnant, you know, you're not sitting there going, hang on a minute, baby, or fetus, 1 month, you should be developing this now. Oh, it's month two now, you should be here. It's happening whether we are involved or not. And you look at nature constantly, the way the birds migrate, they somehow know where to go. They somehow know to sort of, when they're worn out, come into the center and let the stronger birds come to the edge and fly in that uniform V. I mean, something is in control that's not us. So I definitely believe that, like I said, my mother was actually an atheist, even though I did go to a convent. My mum sent us to a private school. She wanted us to have a private education, but she didn't believe in God. So spirituality came later in my life, like I said, in my 20s. So for me, I just think I believe in reincarnation. Sometimes in this world, we look at things and we think things aren't fair. But I trust that, you know, through multiple lifetimes, that it does actually all even out and we all get a shot at a great life. And some of us are more challenged. And the whole point of being incarnated into this world of form or the human world is to learn and expand and grow spiritually.
Do you believe in karma?
Yeah, I do, but not in a sort of in a punishing way, like, okay. Oh, you know, but I do believe it just makes sense to me that, like I said, I do believe in multiple lifetimes, that, you know, because otherwise the world would be so unfair if I thought that starving children in India, that was it. That was the only shot they were ever going to get to live in this world of form or the physical world. And I believe that we come back multiple times in different capacities, different circumstances. And so karma in the sense of, you know, you reap what you sow. Yes, over the big scale of things, not necessarily in this lifetime. You know, that's why sometimes it looks like people get away with murder. But I trust that in other lifetimes that karmic debt will be paid. And it all works out beautifully in the end. My mother used to say I was very Pollyanna. And I would just say, you know, if Pollyanna has me experience a better life, I'd rather be that way than cynical. So
I think that too. I'm always like confused, though, about what I think. Like, I don't know if I believe in reincarnation, but there's just so many weird coincidences to me. Like, if you've ever, like, I lost my best friend in her late 20s. Like, we were both in our late 20s, really tragically. And it's like those moments in life where you might see somebody like walking down the street and you're like, oh my gosh, that's her. And like, you know, like you see somebody that looks just like them and you're like, that can't be her. Like, what is going on? There's just like, or if you have a dream and you're like, well, that didn't really happen, but that really did happen. So I think I'm at a point in my own spirituality where I'm like, well, where do I really, like, where am I with this? And I think it's a gift to be able to question where you are in your spirituality. And also, I consider it a tremendous gift to even have spirituality, you know? And I understand that something so much bigger than us and the crap that you have to go through in life, there's a reason for it, although we'll never really understand it maybe until the next life. I don't know. Yeah. I find that fascinating.
Yeah. Well, for me, you know, somebody that suffered from that extreme low self-esteem, not feeling good enough, when I really, really understood that as spiritual beings, we are all created equal. Nobody is better than and less than another human being ever. Mm-hmm. We show up in the physical world of form slightly different. We're all, you know, short, tall, fat, thin, blue-eyed, brown-eyed, all different forms. You know, earth suits look a little different. And sometimes, you know, some of us have a higher an emotional IQ, and sometimes somebody has a more, you know, higher intellect. I mean, book smarts versus emotional smarts. I mean, I think we all have our strengths and weaknesses, but I 100% know that I am equal to everybody else on the planet. And that was not something I believed growing up. So that's one of the gifts I get from my spiritual understanding. And also just, again, you know, as often if we have been abused, we can get very sort of attached to justice. You know, justice has to be served to the people that abused us. And I have a much more, you know, I'm right here, right now. I don't want to give up the life that I have worrying about something that's happened in the past. I hand it over to the universe, knowing that it's all been taken care of. And I also don't know what trauma that person may have gone through to have them act out the way they did. But all I know is I'm not going to give up my peace of mind today trying to figure that out.
I'm amazed by that, because I find for me, I'm in this weird period where I'm so angry. I cannot get past things. Like, sometimes I feel like I'm a hypocrite because I'm sitting here doing a podcast every week, you know, telling these stories and maybe giving my opinions and talking to beautiful people like you. Yet I'm still in this battle with my own inner demons that I can't seem to shake, which I guess is me being able to admit that is a step, you know, that I'm working through. But it's like, I'm, you know, I'm impressed that you're able to be in that place. And I know that it takes work, you know, to be there. Yeah.
Well, it takes work, but it's also not constant. I mean, I always say we have our personal minds, you know, and in our personal minds, that's where we have a lot of thinking, you know, a lot of fear about the future or regret about the past, or I call it the comparison mind. We're like looking here, looking there, gauging ourselves, comparing, judging. And that's all happening in our personal minds. But I do believe 100% we have this deep, deep, I'm going to show you my little my snow globe that I use when
teach. Everyone, go to YouTube and subscribe and your snow globe.
But it has a little Buddha in the center. And I do believe that's my spiritual essence. That's my, you know, that's my grounding. That's who I am at my core. But, you know, as human beings, as I said, you know, I think they say it's anywhere from 60,000 to 100,000 thoughts go through a human being's mind a day. And this is what it looks like when you are, see that all fuzzy?
That's me.
Fuzzy. Yeah. That's what most of us are like. And what happens is we get into that thinking and we try and make sense of it and sort it out. And sometimes we just, if we just let it move through us, it's just energy moving through us, you know, it's very sort of Buddhist. We will naturally settle back down into that beautiful spiritual essence that we are. But everybody, it doesn't matter if you're sitting meditating in the Himalayas, you know, you're still going to get caught up in your thinking. It's just how soon do you wake up and go, oh, I'm up here again. And then you just settle back down. And we do that all day long, backwards and forwards, backwards and forwards. So I never, when I wake up to, oh, I'm in my thinking, I'm upset today, or I'm angry, or I'm judgmental, I just go, oh, I just got caught up. It's no big deal. And I just settle back down again. So it's just, going, knowing where we are, knowing when we're caught up.
It's a practice that you have to work on. Yeah.
Yeah. Just waking up. You wake up when you're ready to wake up, and then you fall asleep when you fall asleep again. But that's just the human experience.
My mind is always racing, though. Like yesterday when I was driving my rental car that I don't know how to drive, I found myself, I was listening to something the night before, and I found myself, and it was something about you can't live in the past and you can't live in the future. You have to live in the now, which everybody knows. Mm-hmm. But I, for some reason, caught myself in the car thinking about that. And I was like, I really need to do that. I always live in the future and I always live in the past. I never live in the moment. It's one of my biggest flaws. Yeah. I'm constantly like, where am I going next? And then my brain will go, well, I can't believe that happened. I'm so mad about that happening. And then I'll be like, well, what am I going to do here? It's like never being like, this is a great, amazing moment. And I found recently that, and I've talked about this openly on the podcast, that I lean way too much on wine and alcohol, like at night. Like it became like a habit for me where I would be like, oh, I need to have a couple glasses of wine at night. And then I thought, I was like, you know what? I need to take a break. I don't know how long this break is going to be, but the more I read about it and like the things that alcohol does to you, and I'm just saying me, some people maybe not. For me, I don't think it's good because I'm really on this journey of trying to figure out like how to get past my stuff. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. You obviously, I don't know if you drink, but you're beautiful. So.
Well, I do. Thank you. No, I do. And, but there've been periods throughout my life, but when I was going through my divorce, that I didn't drink. I needed all my wits about me. I was very, it was not a healthy relationship. Uh-huh. So towards the end of it, I was like, I got to have all my wits about me.
Yeah.
And so, but I drink now, but again, it's, you know, what you're describing is that's the human condition. That's 99% of the people on the planet reach for something else outside of them to soothe themselves when they do have a very, very busy mind. It's natural to say, oh, I want that glass of wine at the end of the day, or I want whatever. But what I teach is a way to understand that it's actually, we live in an inside out world, not an outside in world. And everything we're feeling is actually created from within. And so we don't, you know, because I mean, just think about it for a second. When you did drink your wine, I guarantee that when you gave yourself permission to have that glass of wine, you already started to feel more relaxed. Yeah. It's often, I mean, yeah. So that shows you that it's actually not the wine. It's what's happening within us. It's actually, you know, it's, we already relax when we say, oh gosh, I'm gonna get that thing that makes me feel better.
Yeah.
But we start to feel better before we even ingest the wine, which is so funny.
It is true. That's so fascinating. But it's also, for me, it was just like a daily habit. And then just was like, I don't want to be doing this. Like I really, and it was also hiding stuff that I knew I needed to work on.
You know, 100%.
Like, if my mind's not clear, how am I going to get past the stuff that I really, truly need to work on? And again, I'm not saying I'm walking away from my buttery Chardonnay for the rest of my life. I'm on a timeout. You are such an amazing lady and so beautiful physically and on the inside, I can tell. I would love to meet you one day. I want my audience to know where they can find you.
Oh, that's so sweet. Thank you very much. And I feel the same. I'd love to meet you. We're only down the road from each other. You can find me either on my website, which is deladjones.com. I also have a YouTube channel. I had a podcast for many years. So there's lots of episodes that I do on my YouTube channel, same name, I won't complicate the issue. There's a couple of other names too, but if you put my name in it, you'll find me. And I offer individual coaching. I do group coaching. I do a program that I designed called A Spiritual Solution to Codependency and Narcissistic Abuse. And I've had incredible results. I firmly believe that, as I said, the marriage of psychology and spirituality is where the real freedom comes from. And I love to share what I know and what my spiritual practice is and how it helped me in my life. And so, yeah.
Well, I have a friend that I'm 100% going to connect you, because I feel like I'm supposed to connect you, the two of you together. It is just absolutely so wonderful meeting you and sitting here, and hopefully my audience learned so much from you. I know I did today. In closing, it is the end of September. It is Suicide Prevention Month. I am honoring, and I've continued to honor throughout this whole month of episodes, all that have been lost to suicide. I'm so very grateful that I'm still here. that I'm still here. It's been a long road, and there's lots of ups and downs in life. And I'm sorry if I'm emotional about this, but I heard a story today and it made me very sad about this. But I'm doing good. I'm still here. And if you are struggling, there's always somebody to talk to. We both openly just shared that we both struggled. It's okay to struggle. It's what you need to know is that you matter. I say this all the time. Your piece of the puzzle is needed in this world, and you have to keep going. So I honor all of those families that have lost a family member to suicide. And I just, if you're listening to this and you're struggling, reach out. There is hope. You can always reach out to me. The best way to find me is on my Instagram, Judging Megan. And you have to keep going, because we need you in this world if you're listening. And in closing, be happy by making other people happy.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Save big money on your next project now at Menards. Update your home with low-maintenance vinyl windows from Jeld-Wen. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on Jeld-Wen windows now at Menards. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save.